Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yes. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. It is program 409 in the series. This is August 3rd, and to my right, the vivacious one is back from Phoenix, Arizona, with a golden tan, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Everything you said is true, except for one thing.
Yeah.
It's the golden tan. I'm so sorry. I can't produce the golden tan, but
you are,
all of it happened.
You know, if Copper Tone needed to rely on you,
yeah,
they'd be out of business.
Yeah, I'm going to be their spokesmodel.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
be the Copper Tone
welcome
girl.
Back, Lisa.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back.
Classic radio is what we have for you all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with one of my favorite shows of all time, maybe my favorite show, Boston Blackie from 1946. Then it's Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, and then The Great Gildersleeve with Hal Perry. That's our lineup. We're going to start things off with our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, the celebrity is your twin, George Clooney.
Yeah.
I can't tell you apart. You're so similar.
I know.
I get confused sometimes. And we are going to be giving away a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers.
Very cool. What number of caller?
We're going to go with caller number 5. You can call right now, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. Hey, and we have Karen on the phone. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Great. And so glad you called in.
Hi,
caller
Karen.
Number 5. And we're going to do a little George Clooney. I mean, Carl Amari.
Yeah.
Okay.
My twin.
Hey, Carl.
Hi, Karen.
Okay, number 1. He played a handyman on the series The Facts of Life. Real or ridiculous?
I'm thinking real.
I think he did play a handyman.
Oh, wait, no.
It wasn't Facts of Life, though.
No.
So you say ridiculous?
You can talk about it. Whatever you guys want.
What do you think, Karen? Changing it?
Let's go with ridiculous.
Yeah, he was a handyman, but not on Facts of Life, I don't think. Because that was that other guy. No, I would say ridiculous.
Snyder or something.
Snyder, right.
No, Snyder was on One Day at a Time.
Oh, whatever.
And it's real.
Oh, shoot. Darn.
That's okay.
Karen, Carl had a sound effects machine ready to go.
Oh, woo. Man.
Okay, so far so good. Number
I mean, he's
two.
My twin. I should have known
you
that.
You should have known. Okay, number 2. In 2009, he was inducted into Time Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. Real or ridiculous?
What does that mean, inducted in? In other words, he was chosen or in?
Okay, you can say chosen.
Okay. Real or ridiculous?
Real or ridiculous?
Let's go real.
Yeah, that's real.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
So here's the story. Time Magazine doesn't have Sexiest Man Alive.
Oh, it's not
Time. Magazine has one of the most influential people in the world.
So what was
People it? People Magazine has Sexiest Man Alive.
She's very sneaky,
just
Karen.
Saying. So, no.
You should work with her every week. See how sneaky she is.
He's
the lucky one. He gets to work with me every week.
Yeah.
Number 3. In 2013, he co-founded Casamigos Tequila and sold it for $700 million in 2017. Real or ridiculous?
Started it when?
2013.
Wow. What do you think, Karen?
I say ridiculous.
I'm going to disagree. I think it's real.
It's real.
Wow.
You got
really?
One.
Yeah.
He got one.
Wow.
This is for
That's
you,
That's absolutely true.
Thank you, Carl.
Here's for me.
that's not a bad investment.
But you're a winner, though,
Karen.
Karen's
the winner.
Carl, yeah.
Carl is not the winner. Karen is the winner. Karen, you've won the desktop indoor weather stations brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Thank you so much for calling, and you are going to love your Weathermaker. Weather
Thank
station,
you.
Weather Maker,
wait.
Weather Station.
Way to go, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Fun playing the game with you, Karen.
Take care.
All right, hon, take care. All right, Karen's a big winner. Hey, folks, don't forget, we have a text in line, and we love getting your texts. It's 312-981-7200. We're here to 2 o'clock in the morning, and we love to read your texts. We get back to just about everyone, almost everybody.
We try. But we do appreciate them. I read them aloud to Carl so he can hear them that way.
Yes.
It means a lot more. It kind of soaks in better that way.
Right. It's osmosis. Soaks in through osmosis. Okay. We're going to start things off now with Boston Blackie. Now, Boston Blackie was a fictional amateur detective. It was created by Jack Boyle. Now, Jack Boyle, Lisa, was in jail. He was actually in a penitentiary around the turn of the century, and he had lots of time on his hands, as you can imagine, and he decided to write about a detective who was a bad guy at one time, and he was a criminal, went to jail, got reformed, and became an amateur detective. So he was a criminal, safe cracker, thief, and then decided to use all this knowledge of the underworld to be an amateur detective. So he called the character Boston Blackie. And the reason why he called him Boston Blackie is he was from Boston and had very, very dark eyes. That was why they called him Boston Blackie, black eye, Blackie, see? And radio, there was movies, there was a radio show, there was a TV show. In the movies, there was an actor by the name of Chester Morris. And Chester Morris played Boston Blackie in 14 films. And then they brought him to radio as a summer replacement for the Amos and Andy show in 1944 for one short summer season. It was a big success. It was sponsored by Rinso with Harlow Wilcox announcing. And then the next year, in 1945, they syndicated a show. They couldn't get Chester Morris, but they got an actor by the name of Dick Calmar. Dick Calmar was married to Dorothy Kilgallen, very famous columnist. And they had about 200 episodes in syndication with Dick Calmar. We have an episode for you now from April 16th, 1946. This is called The Baseball Player Murder. Here is part one now of Boston Blackie.
Hey, Lefty. Lefty, come here, will you?
Sure, boss. What's up?
I'm shifting the batting order for today's game.
Yeah?
I'm going to have Ruth lead off, Duncan batting second, and I'm moving you up to third. Huh. Mike Allen will bat fourth in your old spot.
All right with me, boss. Just stick me anywhere in the lineup where I get a chance to poke a couple, and I'm happy.
Right. Lefty, your team captain. Write out that new batting order and give it to the umps, will you?
Sure, boss.
And tell Mike that he's batting fourth. Oh, by the way, where is he? He's around for batting practice.
No, he's still around. He's over there in the corner making a phone call. I'll go tell him.
Tell him I won't hate him if he puts a couple out of the park, Lefty.
Okay, but I got an idea. He knows that. How's the arm, Joe?
Oh, it's all right. Steve's been working on it.
Good.
Hello?
Having
Hello?
Trouble, Mike?
Bad connection. I think it's okay now. Hello?
Hello? Hello? I can hear you now.
Okay. Is Blackie home?
No, he's not. This is Shorty. Who's this?
This is Mike Allen. Look, tell Boston Blackie I've got to talk to him. I'll call him right after the game today.
And now, back to our story. And in a few moments, we'll meet Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie, enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friend.
This is Clem McCarthy. Continuing with the last half of the first inning, folks. No score as yet. No score. And two out. And Roos is at second. Mike Allen is up. Here comes
Shorty,
the pitch.
Shorty, do we
it's
have to
strike.
Listen to that?
I just want to hear what Mike Allen does. Gosh, I called you just before game time, and I talked to him personally.
Okay.
Bradley sneaks a look at second.
What about
Bradley? Close to the bag.
I don't know, Miss
Now he's facing the plate. Here comes the pitch. Allen swings. Hmm. It's a line drive over the third baseman's head. Coming in. He scores. Standing up. Allen's heading for second. McGuire fires the ball. Allen slides, and he's safe.
We're in.
But wait a minute, folks. Wait a minute. Allen isn't getting up. He may have twisted his ankle. Harry, hand me those field glasses, please. Thank you. Folks, Mike Allen didn't twist his ankle. He's bleeding from a hole in the top of his head.
What?
Here it looks like he's been shot, and it looks as if he's dead.
Holy mackerel.
Okay, now, you ball players, all of you, line up against those dressing room lockers. Now, where's the manager? Which one of you is the manager of this club?
I am Inspector Faraday. I'm Mac Drummond.
Okay, you. One of your ball players was shot with a rifle a little while ago at the ballpark. Now, who could have killed him?
I don't know, Inspector Faraday.
You don't know, I don't know. Who does know? Any of you guys got any ideas? Well, how about you? Who are you, first?
I'm Lefty Jones, Inspector. I'm captain of the team. All I can tell you is there never was a cleaner ball player in the business than Mike. Or a cleaner living guy either. Everybody liked him.
You said it.
Isn't that right, Mac?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, fine. Well, he was killed, so somebody didn't like him. Now, we know it wasn't any of you guys. From the angle of the bullet, we know the shot came from the center field stands. But from who in the stands? There were thousands of people out there.
Look, Inspector, Mike was my friend. Whoever did kill Mike better hope that you find him before I do, because it'd be a pleasure to bounce a bat off his head. We don't know anything.
You told my assistant an hour ago that you remember Mike calling Boston Blackie before the game.
Yes, but Blackie wasn't home, and I don't know what he wanted to talk to him about.
Well, I got men out looking for Blackie. Now, let's get out of facts. You, Donlan.
Yes, sir.
You got any reason to believe Mike Allen was mixed up with anything crooked?
Mike? Not him. Lefty told you he was the cleanest ball player in the league. He was.
Well, I...
All right, you get in there, Blackie. Come on inside. Here he is, Inspector. Boston Blackie. I found him snooping around out in the grounds.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you guys. Sit around on those benches over there and relax.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
Well, Blackie. So Mike Allen made a phone call to you before the game, huh? What did he want?
I don't know. I wasn't home before the game.
Where were you?
Out.
You're going to be a whole lot more out before I get through with you. Where were you when Allen was shot?
Still in the same place, Faraday. Out.
Out where?
No place in particular, just out.
Rollins, grab his arms.
Yes, sir.
Now, maybe we'll get somewhere.
Just a minute, Rollins. You haven't got this arm very tight here.
No.
Here, try a better grip.
How's that?
Oh, good and tight. Okay, that'll do it. What now, Inspector?
Now I search you, that's what. Let's see your coat pockets. Mm-hmm. Change. Paper clip. What's that for, Blackie?
To clip papers, Faraday. See, you learn something every day.
And this? What's this, a hat check? No, it's a rain check for a ball game. For this ball game, too. What do you know about that? So you were in the stands watching the ball game this afternoon, huh?
Guilty as charged. What's the penalty for that?
I'll penalty you. I'll find a reason for you to kill Allen. I'll prove you had the opportunity.
Faraday. Dear friend Faraday. In reply to your most recent and most ridiculous suspicions, may I say that A, I did not kill Mike Allen... B, I came to the park here today to see a ball game. And C, I am going to help you find Allen's killer.
Oh, yeah? Well, D, E, and F, you're going to keep out of my way, and you're not leaving town. You get that?
Lefty!
Now, what's
Lefty,
that?
Where are you?
A very pretty
Lefty,
what's that, I'd say.
Lefty, where are you?
Here I am, honey, right here. Oh. What's the matter?
Oh, Lefty, thank goodness you're all right. I heard over the radio that a ball player was killed. I thought...
Just what did you think, lady?
Who are you?
He's Inspector Faraday of the police, and if you stay here one more minute, he'll make you a suspect.
Now, this is my wife, Inspector. Darling, it was Mike who was shot.
Mike? Oh, no.
Well, Mike will be glad to hear that.
Mike dead? Oh, Lefty, I can't believe it.
It's true, dear. I know it's hard to realize.
Okay. Now, where were we?
You, my dear Inspector, were in a blizzard, as usual. Now, I have a request to make. May I go?
Why not? I can always lay my hands on you when I want you. I've got all these ball players to question. Only keep away from this ballpark. Do you hear, Blackie? Keep away.
Okay, pal. I'll run home now, but you'll need an awfully big scorebook to keep the errors you make before you finally strike out on this case.
All right, Blackie. Now that I've ripped my only pair of nylons climbing over a fence to get in here, tell me what we're doing in a ballpark at 10 o'clock in the evening.
We're going to see a ball game, darling.
At this time?
It's a night game.
Oh, without any lights?
Sure, the fireflies are playing the mosquitoes.
Oh, Blackie, please.
Please you, or please what?
Please tell me what we're doing here. You told me you'd tell me why we were here when we got here. All right, we're here. Now, why?
I also told you that I didn't want you to come. Why don't you remember that, Mary?
Oh, my memory's the convenient kind. Besides, if I didn't come, who would hold your flashlight?
I would.
Then I'm glad I came. I don't trust you with a flashlight. You'd probably trip over something and break your neck.
Who, me? I never tripped over anything in my...
What were you saying? Oh.
Whoever left a pitcher's box in the middle of a baseball
diamond? That was very, very careless of him. Come on, Blackie, tell me what we're doing here.
All right. We're on the way to second base. That's it, right over there.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much. And now tell me what's second base.
It's what Mike Allen was sliding into when the shot caught him in the top of the head.
Darling, we know that. Why come out here?
I want to try something. Here we are, Mary. Now, as I remember the game this afternoon, Mike Allen got up to the plate, wiggling his bat and moving around. He wasn't much of a target until after he hit the ball and slid into second base. Here. Then for a moment, he was still.
Go ahead.
That was the moment the murderer was waiting for. He fired the shot that killed Mike. Faraday figured the angle of the bullet indicated the gun was fired from the grandstand. I want to see if he's right.
Okay, but what do I do all this time?
Well, you're the second baseman.
Oh, goody.
You stand right there. That's right. Now, I'm going to be Mike sliding in. I'll start the slide from about here. And here I come.
Oh, Blackie. Ruin your suit.
Oh, not to mention what I did to my stomach in Faraday's theory. Oh, Mary,
you're
listen.
Right?
There are two kinds of slides. One is the fall away, where the runner comes into the base feet first.
All right, I'm listening.
The other is where he comes sliding in on his stomach.
Just like you did.
Yeah. And here's the big difference. In the fall away, the top of the slide is heads out toward the stands. In the stomach slide, the top of heads.
Hmm?
It's toward. Yeah. Yeah, let's see, it's toward the scoreboard. Mary, Faraday figured that Allen used the fall-away slide. That's natural. Most ball players do.
Well, didn't Allen?
No, he came in on his stomach. I saw the game today. Faraday figured the shot came from the stands. Actually, it came from behind the scoreboard. Let's take a look at that. Here are the steps leading up to the back of the scoreboard, Mary. That's what we want to see. Come on.
Listen, darling, we walked up here awful fast. Just wait till I get my breath back.
Fine beauty you are. You take your own breath away.
Fine friend you are. Get me out to a ball field and don't even throw me a ball to catch.
You've got enough trouble catching your own breath. Here's the door.
Whoa, it's open. Now you can't show off and pick the lock. Okay, at least I get some compensation from that.
Huh. It shouldn't be open. Well, come on inside and let's have that flashlight.
Right. Here it is, and here I am.
The way I figure this, Mary, the murderer hid up here until he could get a good shot at Mike Allen. When Allen slid, he shot.
Well, wasn't there a boy up here? A boy who puts the balls and strikes and outs and everything up?
There should have been. Yes. Yes, there was a boy here, Mary. There he is over there in the corner. The murderer probably knocked him out, but he hit too hard.
Oh, Blackie, he's dead. No wonder the door wasn't locked.
No sign of who the murderer might have been.
Blackie, let's get out of here. If Faraday ever finds you here with that body, he'll never let you out of jail.
I know, but what would Faraday be doing here?
What would Faraday be doing up here? Well, I'd be following you, Blackie.
You could get a bloodhound to do that. He'd do it faster and look better than you do.
Ah-ha. I thought I told you to stay away from here, Blackie.
Yes, I suppose you did. But you didn't tell Miss Wesley to stay away, and I couldn't let her come out here unescorted, could I?
Inspector, do you know that at first he wanted to let me come out here alone? The cat.
Miss Wesley, don't I have enough trouble with Blackie?
Aren't you sure, Inspector?
Oh, sure, I'm sure. And I'm also sure that you had something to do with the murder of Mike Allen. That ought to prove to you, Blackie, you're not so smart, and I'm not so dumb.
It's see on these Boston Blackie shows, Lisa. Well, yeah, that's definitely in Oregon. But on these Boston Blackie shows, Inspector Faraday, not the sharpest tool in the shed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he relied on Boston Blackie to solve the crime for him. So he would oftentimes accuse him or say, I think you're involved in this some way. I think you may be the murderer. And then, of course, Blackie wanted to prove him wrong that he wasn't, so he'd solve the crime. See how that worked out?
I do, yeah.
That's how they would do it on these shows.
I get it.
He was enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friend.
Friends.
Yeah.
Friends.
Sort of like you. You don't have any friends.
I don't. I have you.
Yeah.
That's all good. I need.
You don't need any more friends than me.
One's more than enough.
Because
in my
life. Have multiple personalities, so it's like a lot of friends.
Well, you call me like 24/7, so it feels like a lot of friends.
Right.
Feels like a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think I can
handle anymore.
I mean,
my phone is on speed dial to Lisa, right?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
That's the first portion of Boston Blackie. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. Welcome back. 11:34 here on a Saturday night, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. And Lisa and I are here every single Saturday and Sunday, beginning at 11 p.m. And we play five classic radio shows every weekend. This weekend, Boston Blackie, Gunsmoke, and Gildersleeve tonight. Tomorrow when we come back here, we will have Our Miss Brooks and the Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. What a great lineup, Lisa.
I know. I
Holy
did a good
Toledo.
Job. A lot of people are really happy with me this week.
Man,
so.
What a lineup. Wow. Boston Blackie, my favorite. This is called The Baseball Murder, Baseball Player Murder from April 16th, 1946. Let's get back to it now.
Now back to Boston Blackie. After Mike Allen, baseball star, is mysteriously shot while sliding into second base, it is learned from Lefty Jones, another ball player, and his wife, that Mike had the cleanest record of any man in the major leagues. Boston Blackie, Inspector Faraday's perennial suspect, has figured out that the shot that killed Allen came from behind the baseball scoreboard. And he's investigating the scoreboard when Faraday surprises him. To complicate matters, the scoreboard boy has been found murdered. As we return to our story, it is a few minutes later, and Blackie, Mary Wesley, and Faraday are still up behind the scoreboard.
That's all I've got to tell you, pal. You were following me, so you know I didn't kill this boy here. All I've done so far is show you where the shot that killed Allen came from.
Blackie, why is it you always show me something you think I don't know?
Why, Inspector? Because I always have one less suspect to look for than you do. You waste too much time on me.
Blackie, I'd like to go home, please.
What are you asking him for? I'm the one who decides where you're
going to
go.
Well, where am I going to go, Inspector?
Home. Take her home, Blackie. And believe me, if you don't stay out of this case from here in, it'll be bad news for you.
Believe me, Inspector, if I do stay out of this case, that'll be good news for the murderer.
It don't look like much of a hotel to me, Blackie.
You've got to take what you can get nowadays, Shorty. Besides, baseball players travel a lot, and they're used to once-over lightly accommodations. Let's go in. Push the revolving door, Shorty. I want to know what it's like to be a parasite.
Okay, boss. Don't look like much of a lobby, either. Nobody around.
Except the porter. Oh, boy.
Something I can do for you?
Yeah, where is everybody? How do I find out a certain room number?
Well, if I want any information around here, I'd go ask the clerk.
There he is. The desk is over there in the corner, Blackie.
You're so right, Shorty. Thanks, boy.
That's all right, boss. Neat, clean, and all neat.
What is there about me that attracts characters, Shorty?
Meaning me, boss?
Well, let's just say including you. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. I'd like some information, please.
Yes, sir?
Would you tell me what room Lefty Jones is in, please?
I'll have to announce you, sir, and the Jones phone is busy. Would you mind waiting?
Not at all. By the way, do many of the ball players stop here?
No, sir, not many. Only Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Mr. and Mrs. Jones? What position does she play?
I beg your pardon?
Sorry, ain't you, boss?
Very. Say, that was a terrible thing out at the ballpark today, wasn't it?
Yes, it certainly was. Mr. Allen used to come here to visit the Joneses very often.
He was a great ball player. Ever see him play?
No. My work here is pretty confining, and I never did have much of an interest in baseball. Oh, the Jones wire is free. Who shall I say is calling?
Boston Blackie.
Just a moment, please. Hello? Oh, Mrs. Jones, this is Mr. French at the desk. There's a Mr. Boston Blackie to see you? Very well. You may go right up. The elevator is over there. It's self-service, room 328.
Room 328, he said. That's right here, boss.
Among my many assets is the fact that I can read numbers too, Shorty, but thanks anyhow. Hold it a moment.
Come in.
Hello. I met you, or rather, saw you yesterday, Mrs. Jones.
Yes, I did see you yesterday, Blackie.
Thanks for remembering. This is my friend Shorty.
How do you do? My husband isn't home. Is there anything I can do for you?
That's a leading question, Mrs. Jones, but all I want is some information. What do you know about Mike Allen's death?
Only that the police thought you might have killed him.
That's all?
That's all. And now, would you mind...
Thank you. I'm sorry I bothered you. We'll be leaving now. Oh, by the way, this is rather a remote neighborhood. Will I have any trouble getting a cab?
I'll have the clerk call one for you.
Thanks.
Yes?
Joe, my friends...
Doris, I've got to talk to you.
Not now.
But I tell you, I must. Doris,
Would you mind calling a cab for my friends now, please?
Of course. I'm sorry,
Thank you. You'll have Ernest the porter get you one, Blackie.
Thank you. I'm sorry I bothered you, Mrs. Jones. Oh, there's one more thing. Should Inspector Faraday get in touch with you, please don't mention my visit here, will you?
Of course not. Goodbye, Blackie. I'm sorry I was rude when you first came in.
Forget it. Come on, Shorty. Put down that magazine. Let's go.
Huh? Oh, okay, boss. Only the pictures were getting awful pretty.
Goodbye, Mrs. Jones. Thank you again. And you won't forget to forget I was here in case Inspector Faraday asks you.
I won't. Goodbye.
Goodbye, ma'am.
Frenchie.
Yes? What is it?
Those two men leaving here. Stop them. And call the police immediately.
Ground floor. All out, Blackie.
Right, Shorty. Say, what did you think of Mrs. Jones?
The gal we just left upstairs? Well, if you ask me,
Stay where you are.
Hey, boss, the clerk.
I don't mind the clerk so much as that gun he's
holding.
Don't move,
bothers
me.
The police will be here in a minute.
Hey, boss, the way his hand is twitching makes me nervous.
I'm nervous, Shorty. Nervous enough maybe for you to faint?
I got it, boss.
Get off of me. Get away from me.
Mighty nice fainting, Shorty. Gives me time for this.
Oh!
That clip did it. He's out now, Shorty. Let's you and I get out, too.
And what, Mr. Boston Blackie, were the results of your visit with Mrs. Jones?
I'm not sure, Mary, but I've got an idea. Let's have that telephone.
Why, see? That's French for here it is.
Grazie. That's Italian for thanks.
Uh-huh.
You can't out-language me, lady.
Silly of me to try, wasn't it?
Mary, you couldn't be silly trying anything.
Why, thank you.
Quiet now.
Hello?
Hello? This here's Ernest, the porter, Mr. French. I think you want to talk to me.
What are you talking about, Ernest?
Mr. French, I was at the ball game today. Got there early on account of you gotta get there early to get seats in the bleachers, you know. And I saw you sneaking in back of the scoreboard.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. In an hour, I'll be in a room at 700 West 124th Street. It might be a good idea for you to come up and discuss this matter, don't you think? Goodbye.
Darling, would you mind telling me what was the big idea of the minstrel routine?
Well, first of all, nobody seems to have a reason for killing Mike Allen, but the batting order of yesterday's ball game was switched at the last minute with Mike batting in Lefty Jones' spot. Now, suppose somebody didn't know it was switched and knew only that Jones usually batted in the fourth slot.
Well, then that somebody wouldn't know much about baseball. All lineups are subject to change without notice.
That's right. And the hotel clerk I just talked to doesn't know baseball at all. It was too far from the scoreboard to see a player's face, and maybe he intended to kill Jones, who usually batted fourth.
Yes, but why would he want to kill Jones?
I heard the talk between him and Mrs. Jones. Why, that gal has him doing handsprings. Maybe he figured with Jones out of the way, he could get her to marry him. If I'm right, he'll come up to meet me, and I'll put the heat on him and turn him over to Faraday on ice. Thanks for letting me use your room, Shorty. When you hear a knock on the door, it'll be the room clerk, French. So scram out the fire escape, right?
Well, suppose there's no knock on the door, boss.
Then French is probably innocent. Only I wouldn't want to think that. There he is, Shorty.
Just a minute, boss.
Get out the window, Shorty.
Okay, boss. I'll be seeing you.
Just a minute. Is that you, boss?
Is that me, boss? No, it's me, Faraday, and I'm... Blackie, what are you doing here?
I could ask you that question with better reason, believe me.
I get it, Blackie. Now you're adding blackmail to your other activities. You called French and gave him some story about seeing him go behind the scoreboard yesterday, huh?
And he called you and told you that, huh?
Of course. Only he said the hotel porter called him. Now, what's that all about?
That was me playing hotel porter, Faraday. I think I've got something.
Yeah, and I've got you, which is nothing.
Listen. I think French shot Mike Allen.
Yeah?
Thinking he was killing Lefty Jones and that he still thinks the porter did see him at the ballpark. Look, he could never stop me from telling what I knew if I were the porter and did see him, could he?
So?
So he told the story to you, knowing if he did, that no matter what I said from there on, he'd be in the clear. Faraday, I hate to ask for favors, but, well, this time I'm gonna.
This time you've got to ask for favors. I got a gun in my pocket I'll use in a minute if you get tough.
Here's your gun. I took that out of your pocket right after you came in here.
What?
Yeah, take it. It's heavy. Now, listen to me, Faraday. Give me one more chance to prove that French is the man we want. One chance in 1 hour. What can you lose?
One wonderful case against you. All right, go ahead, Blackie. Only you better make it good.
Thanks, Faraday. Be in the hotel lobby talking to French in 1 hour when a certain phone call will show you what a phony he is.
It's just like I told you, Mr. French. When we got up to that room on 124th Street, there was nobody there.
Well, I knew there was some kind of mistake somewhere, Inspector.
Yeah. Well, I'll just hang around here and grab a smoke for a minute, and then I'll go
up. Oh, excuse me, Inspector. Hello? Victor Hotel?
You called the cops. That wasn't smart, boss.
Oh, well, just a minute. I'll see.
Oh, somebody there, huh?
Yes. Yes, of course.
I get it, boss. Okay. Just don't try the same trick again. You got 30 minutes to show up here so we can talk business.
I see.
That's all.
Certainly. I'll be glad to. Goodbye. The room shortage is getting worse all the time, Inspector.
Yeah, we even noticed that down at the jail. Well, I'll be seeing you, French. I'm going home.
Goodbye, Inspector. I'm going up duty soon, but I can't go home. I've got to go see a friend of mine.
Come on in, boss. I seen you coming down the street, so I know it's you this time.
Ernest? Where are you? Turn on the light.
We don't need no light, boss. It's busted in the first place, and besides, I can feel money. I don't have to see the color of it.
You can feel money, eh? Maybe you can feel this, too.
I wouldn't shoot no more if I was you, Mr. Friend.
What?
Somebody's likely to get hurt.
Where are you?
Somebody named you.
Where are you, you blackmailing...
Right here. Only I'm moving around a little. I'm the restless type.
I'm getting out of here.
That's gonna be a little tough. The door is kind of locked a bit.
What do you want? What is it?
For one thing, I don't want to be a porter no more. And a little dough would fix that. I want to get paid for spying on you and Mrs. Jones.
So you used to watch us, huh?
Sure. And I seen you at the ballpark, too. Like I said, chances are the scoreboard boy saw you, too, so you had to kill him. That's worth $1,000, ain't it, boss?
All right. You know what you're talking about. Come here and get your money.
Okay. Here I come.
And there you go.
I forgot to say I was coming, but I was ducking, too. You try and duck this.
Throw the light on, Faraday.
Nice patch, Blackie.
You've heard enough. I wonder what there was about that guy's chin that attracted my fist. Well, Mary, it's a wonderful afternoon. Where would you like to go?
Where would you like to take me?
To a ball game.
Who's being murdered? Who's playing today?
The Dodgers.
Oh, let's go. But I wish you'd tell me first what poor Mike Allen might have called you about the day he was killed.
Well, I'd asked him for an autographed baseball for your nephew, Mary.
Oh, no.
He probably just wanted to tell me that he had it. You know, it's a curious thing, Mary. French had never been to a baseball game until the day he went and killed Allen and the scoreboard boy.
What's curious about that?
That the first time he sees the national pastime, it's his last time.
Boston Blackie, April 16th, 1946, The Baseball Player Murder, starring Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie, Leslie Woods as Mary, his girlfriend Mary Wesley, and Maurice Tarplin as Inspector Faraday. And then the very famous baseball announcer, Clem McCarthy, was the announcer on the baseball game within this show. So they brought in the real guy to do the announcing. Hope you enjoyed Boston Blackie. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. When you take a road trip, Lisa, which one of your fleet of cars, the Rolls, what do you drive? The Rolls, the Mercedes, the Lamborghini?
I don't like to drive. I like to be driven, Carl.
Well, okay, so when you're being driven, do you take stretch limo, or what do you take?
I take an airplane.
When you take a road trip, you take an airplane?
Uh-huh.
Haven't you ever taken a road trip with the family?
I have, with and without.
Like, stopped at a Cracker Barrel, you know, kind of thing?
A lot of road
trips. When's the last time you've done that?
Well, I mean, just driving from Phoenix to Sedona was 2.5 hours. That felt like a road trip to me.
You know what you should have done in that 2.5 hours?
You tell me.
You should have checked out bestoftheinterstate.com.
Maybe I did.
Oh, did you? You know, if you would have known exactly where to stop. You know that?
I should have.
If you're taking a road trip, here's what you need to do before. And, you know, when you're packing it up and you're getting everything ready to go, getting gas and all that, before you do any of that, you should check out bestoftheinterstate.com. It's here to help you find the best destinations and attractions along all U.S. interstates. Head to bestoftheinterstate.com to plan your best road trip yet. Don't guess. Know the best. Bestoftheinterstate.com. I would not get in my car and drive anywhere without checking out bestoftheinterstate.com.
Okay? Sounds like a good plan.
You need to do the same thing.
Okay,
Lisa.
I'll try it.
Next time you're going to Sedona.
That's
Phoenix.
Right.
What was the weather? Hot?
It was hot, and then a little bit cooler than that.
Like at night, it's kind of nice.
No, you know
though.
What? Sedona is about 10 degrees cooler than Phoenix.
Sedona's really cool.
We were up
right?
in the mountains there. So
beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
How nice.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really
just
nice.
Just you and your hubby.
Right.
How
a little romantic
nice.
Getaway.
Wow.
Right?
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody needs to get away and every once in a while.
I know that.
Have some fun.
I know.
And
we
so
did just that.
The pictures of your brother's home are beautiful.
Yeah,
what a
he's
gorgeous
got a beautiful
place.
Home there.
It's almost like a cool, rustic, almost like gigantic log cabin type of thing.
Sort of. It's a pretty big home, but it's a little
glass.
Bit rustic. He actually has two houses
beautiful.
In Sedona.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
One's not enough.
One's not enough.
Two's
it must
better.
Be nice to be a Metanky.
He's a doctor.
I know. He's,
so,
he's
you
got
know,
several
he, but he works
medical in, facilities out there, right?
Because he does.
He's a foot doctor?
He's an orthopedic surgeon.
Okay, orthopedic
knees
surgeon.
Knees and hips.
Oh, wow.
That kind of thing.
So far, so good. I don't need
so
his...
So far, so good. But
my
when
knees
you're ready,
my,
you know where to go.
My knees and my hips are...
I'll get you a good deal out there.
I'm sure you will. That'd be great. That'd be a nice place to recuperate.
Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can head up to the ranch.
I'll be like, what's his first name?
Brian.
All right, Brian, thanks for doing my hip. Now I'm going to go stay about a month at your log cabin.
That could be arranged for the right amount of money.
I'm sure. But he's got a bunch of kids running around, though. I don't know if I'm going to recuperate. I can't.
Well, the youngest is in college. So
okay.
They started, yeah.
That's right.
You met Jonah and Jacob here.
Yeah.
Right.
They read radio commercials.
They rode the radio commercials. Yes, they did. They were still talking about that.
They had a
really great time here.
Well, I'm glad you're back.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be back.
And in our next hour, we have Gunsmoke. That's going to be great. Gunsmoke Adventure from 1956, William Conrad. And it's really interesting to listen to the Gunsmoke shows and then watch Gunsmoke. I watch Gunsmoke all the time on all the classic television stations like MeTV, Antenna TV. And it was on for so long on television. James Arness was fantastic as Matt Dillon. But William Conrad is fantastic as Matt Dillon, too. Two completely different looking guys, but on radio, didn't matter. I mean, look, I could be 6'4 on radio.
That's
I am 6'4.
In your brain, in your mind,
I am
6'4
on radio. In fact, you know what?
What?
I'm going to be 6'5.
That's great.
6'5.
Where in your brain, you can be anybody you want.
If I was 6'5, I would be so much better at baseball.
At what?
At baseball. Yeah, because,
you'd be better at everything, Carl.
I'd be better. You're right. I would be better at everything. Why did I have to be 5'8"? 5'8". I'm 5'8".
Maybe 7 on your tiptoes.
Come on. I just had a physical. I'm 5'8".
Your physical?
But I just did. I just did a physical. They said I was 5'8". I was stretching as
I bet
much
you
as
were.
I was sticking my
had
neck.
Had some platform shoes
my
on
neck
your tippy toes.
No, my mom wouldn't let me get the platform shoes.
She did, and you tripped.
I know, but then she took them away from me.
Good idea.
She was like, see, I told you were going to fall and twist your ankle. These were big ones. These were really big. They were like this big, Lisa, like 4 or 5 inches.
What are we talking about?
You know, did you ever see the movie Saturday Night Live? Saturday Night Fever.
Of course.
Remember the short guy when they're gang and he comes out with the big platform
yes,
shoes?
I do.
That's how big my platform shoes were.
That's
maybe
how
even
big you were.
Maybe even bigger than that. But those were the days, man, with the disco and all that. And
going to the
disco, right?
Yep.
How cool was that?
It was.
See you know, people that are younger than us, okay, like you know,
Shante.
She never went to discos. You never went to a disco, right, Shante?
No.
And
she's too
young.
Curtis.
He never went to a disco. You know how cool it was in the 1970s.
You wear a leisure suit.
And you went to a disco.
And you open up a few buttons.
I used to go to
show
Stale.
Off the chest hair.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's exactly right.
Bling hadn't become bling yet,
right.
So you could wear a chain.
A nice long gold chain.
Yes.
And my chest hair is just huge, you know.
What are we talking about again?
And I had
that was the disco thing.
Cool. Okay. And I would go to a place called Stay Out. That was the discotheque.
I went to the Snuggery.
Didn't
you go there?
I think so. I went to but that wasn't a disco, was it?
Snuggery? Not a disco.
It was more of a bar.
They played disco-y music.
Yeah, but
it was a bar.
But Stay
but
Out.
Did they have a dance floor?
Of course
was it
they
always,
did.
Was
this
it
lit
always
up.
Full? Did they have a disc jockey?
Yeah, this
I
lit up. It was a lit up floor, like in Saturday Night Fever. And it was big, and there was all these people there dancing, and you know, it was great.
Did you dance?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wasn't good, but
and then there was the
but if you were 6'5", you would have been great.
Darn right, I would have been.
And then the drinking, and then there were people going into the bathroom.
There wasn't any drinking.
Well, that's what girls do.
Inhaling things.
No,
not that part.
It wasn't like that because this was like more of a teenager thing.
No,
this
we were
wasn't
in high school.
Yeah, they didn't have alcohol or anything like that. But
hell, I went through that before you guys did.
Yeah, it was a
fun. Maybe we saw you there.
It's a lot of fun.
No, I was on the East Coast.
And I'll never forget.
Back in the day.
I'll never forget, and maybe this happened to you too, David. Seeing the movie.
Here we go.
Saturday Night Fever.
There it is.
Oh, yeah, that's
I never
it.
Saw the movie. And
oh,
And I never learned how to do the hustle, because I saw people doing it, and it was like, that looks awfully complicated. Yeah, it'll be gone by before the summer is over. Right.
Beaches, man.
You know what?
I was wrong.
This is never over. This is classic.
I'll tell you what. I saw this movie in the theater in the 70s with my friend Vince Lombardi. We saw this movie, and it was like, it changed our lives.
Yeah.
It absolutely changed our lives. We were like, okay, we need to learn how to dance. We need to get some silk shirts and some silk pants and some platform shoes and start going to
discotheques.
Well,
it changed John Travolta's life, too.
It did. But those were the days.
You did get dressed up to go to the club.
You got dressed up, and it took a long time. It was like, you know.
It was the days of aftershave and cologne for men.
And
perfume for women.
And, like, I never, ever wore, after the disco era, I never wore, like, cream on my face. I would put cream and cologne in my hair.
You still have to have cologne on.
Well, cologne, yeah. But I used to put product in my hair to make it perfect. I don't do any of that.
No product in their hair?
But the younger generation, but the millennials do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do.
That's true.
But those, I mean,
we should be glad we grew up, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, no, I wish I could go back to those days.
And
really?
Enjoy that. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I did too.
You know what else is fun? The news. But I guess we're going to skip.
I'll take your time. I'm in no hurry.
I guess we'll have to go. In our next hour, Gunsmoke. Yep. And then after that, we have Gildersleeve.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is 10 minutes after midnight. Thanks, David. And in this hour, we have Gunsmoke coming your way, a show called Pretty Mama, starring William Conrad. But before we do that, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, the celebrity is Glenn Close. Good one. You know her.
Oh, yeah. Fatal Attraction.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. Great movie.
That movie flipped me out.
That really put her on the map there.
Oh, yeah. That movie, like, whoo.
That was great. Who didn't see Fatal Attraction?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty sure even Curtis saw it. Curtis, you didn't see it?
No, he didn't see it.
Oh, my gosh, Curtis.
Yeah.
So disappointed.
Wow.
Anyways, we're going to go with caller number 4. Call right now, 312-981-7200. You're a winner, whether you get one right or none right. Call right now. We'll be right back. Sorry. And you know what we're going to give away? A desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling. Okie dokie. Now we'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
And we have David on the phone. Hey, David.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Glad you made it through.
Hi, David.
You're already a winner. I had so many people text in and ask me about that. How many do you have to have right to win? You're already a winner. And are you a Glenn Close aficionado?
Yeah.
Good. All right. This shouldn't be too difficult. Carl, take it from David.
That woman scared the heck out of me in that
movie. Oh, I know. She was scary.
Man.
All right. We're going to do some things, questions about that.
All right.
Okay, number one. During a shoot of Fatal Attraction, she suffered a concussion when her head smashed against a mirror. Is that real or ridiculous?
Sounds like it could be real. What do you think, Carl?
I think real.
Yeah, real.
Yeah, I think so, too. It is real.
All right.
That makes sense, right? All right, number two. The knife Glenn Close used to attack Michael Douglas with at the end of Fatal Attraction was made of cardboard. Real or ridiculous?
Yeah, they could have made it out of cardboard and then put aluminum foil on it, but I'm going to say ridiculous.
I'm going to say real.
It's real.
All right.
It's real.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm so sorry.
And this is for me.
Oh, yeah. Number three. Her film debut was in 1983 with the film The Big Chill. Real or ridiculous?
That might be her debut. She was in The World According to Garp, and that was like 84. She might have been in stuff beforehand. I'm going to say that that's real.
I think it's real.
You know, you were so close, David. It's ridiculous. But because The World According to Garp was in 1982, and that was her film debut.
Oh,
you
really?
Were right on it. You were right there.
She's amazing in that.
Yes, she really was. That was a great movie. Carl, you were not right either. But either way.
Story of my life.
But by the way, you know what, David? You are the winner here, and you get a great prize because you'll win the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. It's a great prize and a great company. You're going to love it. So thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care.
I've been listening to you since you were on that other radio station years ago. I think you do a great job.
Thank you very much, David.
That
I appreciate
nice.
You very much. Thanks a lot.
Have a good night.
You too. All right. So, Lisa, Gunsmoke. We
yes.
play a lot of Gunsmoke. People love Gunsmoke.
People love it.
And I think it's probably the best Western for adults. You know, there were kids' Westerns like The Lone Ranger, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, Hopalong Cassidy. These were more juvenile shows, and they were great. But as far as an adult Western, I would say the two best were Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel. Probably Gunsmoke just a smidge better. And that's just my opinion, but I think most people would agree that Gunsmoke was the top adult Western of the golden age of radio. William Conrad, who probably was in more radio shows than anyone, other than maybe, Joseph Kearns, he was in a lot of stuff. But I would say William Conrad and John Daner, those two guys probably did more radio than anyone. He was Marshall Matt Dillon. And this is an episode called Pretty Mama from November 11, 1956, part one now of Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Hello, Kitty. Is the Long Branch on fire or something?
Of course not. What do you mean?
I can't figure anything else that'd get you up this early in the morning.
Twice a year, Matt. Today's one of the days. You going to breakfast?
Yeah, you want to join me?
Thank you, sir. Where do we go? Delmonico's?
That's the only place open before 10 o'clock.
Mm. Are the mornings always like this, Matt?
What?
Oh, so crisp and clear.
Oh, yeah, most always. It's the best part of the day, as a matter of fact.
It's peaceful. I guess that's the feeling.
That's the only time of day Dodge is peaceful.
Well, that little shaver's in a big hurry about something.
That's Hank Marvel's kid, Beanie, they call him.
Well, he stopped at the jail, man.
Yeah, wait a minute, Kitty.
Yeah.
Hey, Beanie! What's the matter, Beanie?
You gotta come out to the ranch, Marshal. Right away. It's my pop. He's been shot.
Been shot? Well, how bad is he?
He's dead.
Where is he, Beanie?
In the barn, Doc. I'll show you.
You coming, Matt? No, Doc. Chester, you go on with Doc, huh? I want to talk to Ms. Marvel first.
All right, Chester.
Ms. Marvel?
Come in, Marshal.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm sure sorry to hear about this.
Just a few hours ago, Hank was sitting there eating his breakfast. Now he's dead.
Where did it happen, Miss Marvel?
Down by the creek. He was laying there on the ground, shot to death. And Beanie and me got him into the buckboard and brought him back.
Do you have any idea how he was shot?
No, Marshal, no idea at all. Hank didn't have no enemies. He got along with everybody.
Uh-huh. When did it happen? Right after he left home?
Half hour, maybe. Him and Beanie left together. I was going to make soap today, and I just got the kettle set up out there in the yard when Beanie come riding back half out of his wits.
Well, was Beanie with him at the time?
No. Hank left him at the pumpkin patch and went on alone. We raised some pumpkins along the slope below the edge of the bluff. That's Hank's favorite kind of pie, pumpkin. He always says... Well, he liked it better than any other kind.
Yes, did Beanie hear the shot?
Yes, and he rode along the bluff to see if maybe Hank had shot a deer. And then he seen his father laying down there by the creek.
Did he see anything else? Anybody around?
No, it's awful brushy down there in the bottoms.
Uh-huh. You're kind of short on neighbors around here, aren't you?
Well, there ain't any at all, Marshal. There's just the Badlands on to the west, and the Circle D spread comes up against us on the other side.
Yeah. Circle D's got a line cabin around here, haven't they?
Oh, it's about a mile and a half north.
They got the same rider staying there, Jack Teague?
Yes.
You folks see much of him?
Well, he's stopped by a few times.
Hmm. Ms. Marvel, there's been a little talk around Dodge about Teague and...
And about me, too, I know. And it's a lie, Marshal.
Well, I didn't mean anything, ma'am. It's just that they say that he's a chaser.
Hank heard the same stories and the same lies. That's why he ordered Jack Teague off the place.
No? Well, when was that?
Last night.
Well, Matt, I guess that's it. The bullet caught him in the back, right on the shoulder blade. He never knew what hit him.
Did you get the bullet, Doc?
Yeah, here you are. Rifle of some kind, looks like.
Yeah, small caliber, though. Nothing like a Sharps 50.
No, more like one of those light Winchesters. That won't help you much. Plenty of both kinds around.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you and Chester riding back into Dodge now?
Now I want to take a look at the place where it happened. The kid's gone along in Shaw's.
Where'd he get to, Mr. Dillon?
Oh, in the house with his mother, I guess. She's pretty upset.
But at least she's lucky to have the boy left. Be mighty hard for a woman to keep this place up by herself.
Yeah, it sure would.
It's an awful nice little ranch. I wished I had it.
You wish it? Are you thinking about the ranch, Chester, or the widow?
Oh, now, Doc.
That's all right. I can't see as I blame you. She's a mighty pretty woman.
Well, sure she is, but...
And so doggone young-looking. It's hard to think of her as having a kid like that, 8 or 9 years old. She sure is a pretty little thing. Don't you think so, Matt?
Yeah, she's pretty all right, Doc. Maybe she's too pretty.
Yeah, she's actually a pretty mama.
That's what people say to me all the time.
You're a pretty mama.
Yeah, I'm just too pretty.
Pretty Mama. That's the name of this show.
Yep.
On Gunsmoke, November 11th, 1956, William Conrad. He always had a great supporting cast with him. Parley Bear was Deputy Chester Proudfoot. Howard McNear was Doc Adams. Virginia Gregg was always on these shows. Georgia Ellis was the saloon girl, Kitty Russell. and George Walsh doing the announcing. Always, always a great cast on Gunsmoke. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. You hear the quality of this show. That's because it's direct from a master recording that I got from the CBS vaults. All of these CBS shows we got from CBS, all of our NBC shows from NBC, and we license these radio programs from the people who created them, and that's why we have great, great, great quality. And we have 100,000 shows in our library, and we decided about a year ago to start a club for our listeners so they can receive these amazing quality shows that you can't get anywhere else, the greatest quality shows from our library. 10 shows every month are sent to our club members on CD, on 5 CDs, or via digital download. Now, Lisa is a club member. Mike is a club member. Hundreds and hundreds of our listeners are club members. And you can choose either way. You can get the 10 shows sent to you along with the liner notes on 5 CDs in a collector case, the way that Mike likes to get them. Or you can get them like Lisa likes to get them via digital download. You still get the liner notes. And it's all at our website, ClassicRadioClub.com. And we have a special offer running right now, don't we, Lisa?
We do. The first month is a dollar.
Wow.
Right? That's that simple. That's
it. Cup of coffee.
Right. It's nothing. And if you love it, terrific. You can stick with it. And if it's not your cup of tea or coffee, then you can cancel. No problem. But we hope you'll give it a shot.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the regular price, just so you know, after the first month, for 5 CDs in a collector case. Now, you're talking about 5 CDs. Normally, a CD is like $10. This is 5 CDs for only $14.99. $14.99 for 5 CDs each month. And they're in a collector case. Now, if you want the digital, it's only a dollar a show. It's $9.99. So that's not bad. It's only basically if you join the membership and you get the 10 shows sent to you each month, it's only $9.99. And you get 10 of the greatest shows of all time. A dollar a show. Not bad. But the first month, try it for only a dollar.
Right.
Check it out. See if you love it. If you don't, you can cancel. You can cancel at any time. We do not say, all right, you joined and now you've got to be in it for, you know, a year or anything like that. It's not like that. If you're not happy, just cancel. And that's that, right? ClassicRadioClub.com. That's our website. Check it out. We'll be back right after these words. We had a couple people text in and said, is there an 800 number where people can call and join the club? And there is. There's an 888 number, but it's a toll-free number.
Right. I'll give it to you. It is 888-642-6556. I think it's 24/7, right, Carl?
Yeah, there's operators 24/7. If they don't answer, then they will call back.
They
will call you back.
Yeah. But if you want to join the Classic Radio Club or you just want more information and you don't want to go to the website, give them a call. I'll give the number one more time. It's 888-642-6556, toll free.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
My headphones are ripped, Lisa. Did you see this?
Well, I just
got new headphones.
Did you break your headphones?
My headphones are all
ripped. You know what happened, Roger? I got new headphones last week, and they're fantastic, and he's jealous, and he wants them, too.
So he broke his headphones so he can get
one? Yeah, so now he said you can order a pair for me.
That's true. I was totally happy with my headphones.
Until I tried, until he saw mine.
I looked at my headphones, and they're all ripped.
Ripped where? Around the ears?
Look, the ears are falling off.
He-Man? You're He-Man and you ripped your
phone?
His ears are falling
off. No, one of my headphone ears is all falling off.
Yeah. Oh, listen to the...
Can you glue it back on?
No.
It'd be a lot cheaper than new headphones.
I'm glue it. I want a pair exactly like yours.
You do. You like the all black ones like I got?
Those are cool.
I know.
See that. It comes out now.
You know... But
I will charge you 20% interest for ordering and paying ahead of time.
And I'm her agent.
You know, my birthday's coming out, Lisa.
It is, but these were really expensive.
You can afford it.
I'll buy you a case for them.
Roger, if I had Lisa's money, I'd burn mine.
If
really?
Yeah. That's funny.
Come on, Lisa. My birthday's coming up.
I know it is.
You know what? You know what I'm going to get for your birthday?
What? What are you going to get for my birthday?
I'm going to get for your birthday the little connector piece that allows you to plug your headphones into the audio board.
No, it comes with it.
Oh, it comes with it? Well, then you're forget it.
He's set up.
Forget it. You're on your own.
I guess that's what I want for my birthday, new headphones.
Okay, well, I'll go to Radio Shack and get you a real nice pair.
There you go.
All right, so... Does Radio Shack still, are they around?
Yeah, there's some.
Okay.
No, they're not.
Oh, I thought there might be.
Nope.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I lived at Radio Shack when I was growing up. I was there all the time.
He had his mail address there.
There was a lot of great stuff there.
Yeah, I know you did. So did I. I'll admit it.
We're kind of, we're kind of reminiscing, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Do you remember when?
Wait. Do you remember when the micro, micro cassettes came out?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
And Radio Shack was the place you went and bought the little, you know, recorder and the little micro cassette.
Sure. My dad used to have those.
It was
because
like
he would record for his secretary.
Right. Yeah.
And so I used to play with it.
And they were the same cassettes for message phones.
Yeah.
Do you remember the message phones?
Yes,
it was the same size.
Yes, of course I do. Yes. Sure.
Oh. But Radio Shack, that's where I got all my cassette players.
Well, I'm going to go there for you and get you a real nice pair of headphones.
And I think the brand was called Realistic.
It was.
Yes, it was Realistic. Yeah. That was their brand.
I used to buy my microphones there.
You do too.
In fact, my first mixer was a Radio Shack mixer.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Oh, man.
I used to go there when I was teaching.
Yeah.
And I was building radio stations at the schools I was at. I would go there for all the connectors and the wiring and all that stuff. And, and that's what I would use.
I bought my tape recorder there so I could record myself doing all sorts of interesting things.
She used to record herself.
No,
pretending to be on the radio?
And then pretend she was on the radio. And now she's on the radio.
I did. Yeah. I used to sing, too, and then listen to it back so I could
critique
myself.
You're like, Mom, Dad, listen how great I sound.
What did they do with those cassettes? They box them up?
I wish I had them, Roger. I wish I had them.
I know.
Can you see Mr. and Mrs. Matanky? Oh, yeah, honey, that sounds great.
Sound great. You'll be on the radio one day,
Someday, maybe you'll be on a college
WGN.
Radio station.
Yeah, right.
Aren't you funny?
Oh man.
Those were the days. Yeah. All right. Well, we're listening to an episode of Gunsmoke called Pretty Mama from November 11th, 1956. Here's the conclusion.
There's where he was, Marshal, laying right there in the trail.
All right, Beanie. Let's take a look, Chester.
Yeah, sure.
I come riding along the bluff up there after I heard that old shot, and I got right there at the point before I see him laying here.
Uh-huh. Your mother was right. There's plenty of brush in here.
There's cover enough for a tribe of Comanches.
You think maybe it was Comanches?
No, Beanie. I was just saying that. I sure ain't much to go on, Mr. Dillon.
Nothing.
With all this brush for men to hide in without being seen.
To hide in, yeah, but getting away after it'd be a different story.
Uh-huh.
Anybody up there on the edge of that bluff ought to be able to see a man moving down here, whether he was a foot or horseback.
Yeah, lots of open spaces he'd have to cross.
Yeah. Beanie, you were up there on the edge of the bluff, huh?
Well, yes, sir, I was. But I didn't see nobody. Nobody at all, Marshal.
Uh-huh. Were you there last night when your pa ordered Jack Teague off the place?
Yes, sir.
That was quite a ruckus, I imagine, huh?
It sure was. Pa was mad and he got Mama crying. Mr. Teague was awful mad, too, when he left.
I imagine a boy your age might be a little scared of a fellow like Teague, huh?
Yes, sir. Mom was scared of him, too, Marshal. She told Pa he was a bad man to cross.
Yeah. I want you to tell me something, Beanie. From up there on the bluff, who did you see riding away?
I see Mr. Teague.
I
think that line cabin's just around the next turn yonder, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I caught a glimpse of it from back up the trail away.
Oh, God, all you think they'd clear out some of this cussed brush from along the trail. I bet they'd be some good hunting along these bottoms, though, when the deer starts drifting down from the north.
Well, maybe we'll give it a try in the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, I'll get my old Springfield out and clean it up some.
Pull up, Chester.
Huh?
There's the cabin.
Yeah.
Let's go on foot from here.
There's a horse tied there at the corner.
Yeah. All saddled up. Bedroll tied on behind. Looks like maybe Tig's figuring on moving.
Hit the ground.
Reckon we come to the right place.
Yeah, it looks that way. He's still there, though.
That cabin ain't much protection. Just built out of shake sidings.
Yeah. Maybe we ought to show him that, Chester. Might convince him. Hey, Tig!
He don't act very convinced, does he?
No. Don't be a fool, Tig. Those wolves won't even slow down a bullet. Now come out with your hands up. All right, then.
Oh, hold it, Marshal. Hold it. My dear Buck.
All right, come on out, then.
That last bullet must have breathed on him.
All right, hold it, Tig. That's far enough.
I knowed I was in for it when June rode over and told me Hank was shot.
June?
Yeah, Miss Marvel. That's why I was trying to get away. I knowed I wouldn't have a chance.
Tig, Hank's boy saw you.
He saw me? He saw me what?
Right away, right after his dad was shot.
Well, that's a lie. I weren't even near them bottoms this morning.
You got a rifle here?
Sure. I got a Sharps 50, and it's been fired, too. I tried for a deer this morning.
Hank Marvel wasn't killed with a Sharps. You got a small bore here, a light Winchester, maybe?
Of course not. That's a woman's gun, Marshal.
Marshal.
Miss Marvel.
Oh, I wasn't expecting you back so soon.
Buzz, something I had a check on, ma'am.
Oh, won't you come in?
No, thanks. Got a couple of questions, that's all.
Have you talked to Mr. Teague?
I arrested him.
What?
Chester took him into Dodge. Is Beanie here, Miss Marvel?
Oh, no, he went out along the bluff where he stacked them pumpkins. Raccoons are always getting into them. They come out sometimes just before dark. Why do you want to see Beanie, Marshal?
I just want to talk to him, that's all.
Well, if it's something I can tell you...
There's one thing you can probably tell me. What kind of a rifle did your husband own?
Well, the only one he ever used was the Sharps 50.
Uh-huh. Is that the only one he owned?
No, there's a light Winchester out in the barn, but... Marshal, if you've arrested Mr. Teague, why are you asking all these questions?
Do you know how to use a rifle, Miss Marvel?
Of course I do. Hank taught me. If you get anybody living out here on the prairie, you ought to know how to shoot.
Uh-huh. All right, I won't take any more of your time now, Miss Marvel. Goodbye.
Got him! By golly, I got him!
That was a good shot, Beanie.
Marshal, I didn't hear you come up.
Well, I kept quiet. I saw you trying to get a sight on that coon. Sit down, Benny. I want to talk to you.
Sure, Marshal. That darn old coon sure won't get no more of them pumpkins.
No, I guess he won't. That, your mother's Winchester?
Well, yeah, Pop got it for her. But she said it's part mine, too.
That's a fine-looking gun.
It sure is, Marshal. It's just a mighty fine gun, that's all. Did you find Mr. Teague?
Yeah, I found him. Benny, he said he wasn't down there in the bottoms this morning.
But I seen him, Marshal, plain as anything.
I was just talking to your mother. She's a mighty fine woman, Benny.
She ain't no woman. She's a girl.
Oh?
She's a lot younger than Pop was. She's pretty near 11 years younger.
She and your Pop get along pretty well, did they?
Well, he made her cry sometimes. Like last night, after Mr. Teague left. And again this morning, too.
Now, what happened this morning?
Same thing. He was jawing at her about Mr. Teague. She was going to make soap. And mostly, I help her when she does. Them kettles is real heavy. But this morning, he wouldn't let me.
Is that so?
He made me come here to the pumpkin patch. Said a little work would be good for her. Help get her feet back on the ground. I don't like it, Marshal. When he makes Mama cry, I get all funny inside.
I see. Beanie, I guess you'd do just about anything for your mother, wouldn't you?
Sure I would.
Beanie Teague wasn't down there this morning.
Well, sure he was.
You didn't see him. You know that, and I know it. Now, why did you say you did?
I hate him, Marshal. And you kept saying I must have seen somebody, so finally I said it was him.
Why do you hate him?
Because if it hadn't been for him, it wouldn't have happened. Pop wouldn't have made her cry if Mr. Teague hadn't come around. If Pop gone, he'd have kept coming back, and he'd have kept bothering her. So I said it was him I seen. Ma and me don't need nobody like him coming around.
You really didn't see anybody this morning, did you?
No, sir.
And you shot your father yourself, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I didn't go to do it, sir. It was just all of a sudden. Them pumpkins could have waited, Marshal. Them soap kettles are so heavy.
Yeah, I guess they are, Beanie. How old are you?
8. Pretty near 9, sir.
Pretty near 9, huh?
What do you figure will happen to me, Marshal?
Benny, I wish I knew.
Now, William Conrad.
You know, on the high plains, a man lived hard and worked hard, and the years slipped by in a hurry. But next week, a man returning to Dodge finds that everything has changed because he stayed away too long. And his plan for changing things back calls for the murder of his brother. And that was the West.
Gunsmoke. Produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The script was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Butch Bernard, and John Daner. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Join us again next week for another story on Gunsmoke.
That's Gunsmoke, a great broadcast going back to November 11th, 1956. It's heard on CBS called Pretty Mama. and that starred William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. There's the little boy there in that show. His name is Butch Bernard. I'm going to do a little research on him. He did a great job as the... I've worked with kids in these classic, you know, when we're doing like Twilight Zones and the Fangoria Dread Time stories. And whenever there was kids, I would always hire kids. And it's tough because... You know, they, I mean...
Because they're kids.
Well, it's just tough to work with kids and make it sound as good as this
kid. You got to get what you need out of them.
Exactly.
And they're not all directable.
Yeah, and this kid did a really, really good job. You know what I really love also about Gunsmoke is the sound effects. Dragnet and Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel also, probably those three had the best sound effects. I remember reading about Gunsmoke and how there was a sound effects team. There was several of the team that would go out onto a farm and shoot real guns, different caliber guns, and record it because not all the guns were the same caliber. Yeah. Back in the, you know, there was smaller caliber guns, larger caliber guns. You know, there was 40 caliber, 38 caliber, 32 caliber, 25 caliber. They were talking about a smaller gun in here, probably was a 22 caliber. And so they would, it was so realistic. They would actually spend the time and shoot different guns and rifles. And then when they needed that kind of a gun, they would pull that sound effect out. They would make like little sound effect records of them. You know, and then they had all the platters there. And I mean, that's the type of quality that you got when you listen to Gunsmoke or Dragnet. Dragnet did that as well. Dragnet was very interesting, too. Peggy Weber, who we've had on the show, who was a cast member on Dragnet, said Jack Webb was really different. He didn't want you to be close to the microphone. He would have the sound effects guys turn the microphones almost all the way to 10. And he would have everybody standing way back. Now, these were very powerful microphones. These were ribbon microphones. And they worked all the way around, 360 degrees. But most of the actors in the golden age of radio, they would work, you know, a foot or two away from the microphone. Well, he wanted you 5, 6, 7 feet away. And he turned up the mics. And that's why Dragnet sounds a little different than every other show. And maybe that's why it sounds so real, because it was not like one actor close to the mic and another actor over. They were all kind of far away from the microphone, and it just gave you a different ambiance, you know, it's different sound tonality to the show. And when you listen to Dragnet next time, take a listen for that. All right, hope you enjoyed Gunsmoke. We have the great Gildersleeve in our next hour, but first, these words. All right, Lisa, we're here every Saturday and Sunday playing your favorite classic radio shows. We haven't played a My Favorite Husband in a while.
No, you have not. So, I'll see if I can
because I know that's
get one
your
on the docket.
Show.
That's a great one. Who doesn't love Lucille Ball?
She's just great.
I wanted to mention somebody had posted on our Facebook that there is still a Radio Shack.
Yes.
This one, I think he said, was in Yorkville. Inside
Yorktown?
Of Yorktown? I have to go back and check. Wait a second. I thought he said... He said, there's a Radio Shack in Yorkville, Illinois, in the Ace Hardware store. So he said, I can still buy Carl those stylish headphones he's been wanting. So I'm going to get right on that.
I mean, my headphones broke, and these are not even that old.
No, but that's because you got to get the good ones.
I wonder if it's because they're in my backpack and
yeah,
just
they get smashed.
It's in there.
This time we'll get you a case.
All right.
I'm on it for you.
All right, so Saturdays and Sundays here, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Don't miss it. We have a show each night. You know, a couple of times I've had people say, is it the same show Saturday and Sunday? Is it just like played again? No, it's a completely new show.
And we're not the same either.
Right.
Carl has a lot of moods.
That's
kind of like a mood ring. Sometimes you're blue, sometimes
you're
green.
Well, I'm in a really good mood tonight.
Kind of yellow tonight.
Because my team won. My baseball team won.
That is
good. We had a 4 o'clock game. I got another 4 o'clock game tomorrow.
Except your headphones broke, so
today.
It kind of mellowed the mood a little bit.
Yeah, no. We won 11-4, and when we win, I'm always in a really good mood.
How's the mood going to be tomorrow night or tonight?
Well, we're going to win again.
Are you playing again?
Playing again at 4 o'clock.
Oh, boy, I'm going to cross my fingers for you. For me.
And then my poor sister, I go there and I take a shower there and I just kind of take a nap over there.
She could feed you some dinner while you're there.
She does. And this is what I'll do. Hey, sis, I got a game out your way. So when I'm done, I'm going to need your shower. I'm going to need you to make me a sandwich.
A what?
A sandwich.
A sandwich?
Sandwich.
A sandwich.
Sandwich.
A sandwich.
A sandwich.
A sandwich.
A sandwich. And she makes the best, egg and cheese sandwiches.
That sounds good.
It's like, I don't know what she does, I don't know how she does it.
Does she put it
she's just a really good cook.
Eggs and some cheese, possibly.
And some cheese. Does she use bread, too?
Yeah, she uses bread.
Melt it in one of those, one of those griddle things?
She toasts the bread.
Yeah.
Okay? Like in a toaster oven?
Like in a toaster. That's where you toast the bread.
No, a toaster oven. It's not a toaster. It's a toaster oven.
It's the same
Whatever.
Thing.
It tastes better in a toaster
it
oven.
It tastes better. You know why it tastes better? Because food always tastes better when
somebody else makes it
for you.
And then you don't have to clean up either.
No.
And
although
then
it's nice to help.
Like, I don't know what kind of cheese it is. It's so good.
Is it like a yellow cheese?
I can't remember what kind of cheese it is. Maybe it's like... I don't know.
Does she cut the edges off of the bread
no,
for you?
No, she leaves the crust on. But then she makes the eggs, and then she puts salt and pepper
on
it.
She makes them
really
like in a pan, and she stirs them up really
and
well.
And then she puts it in the bread, but the bread is toasted.
Ooh.
So good.
Potato chips or Fritos?
Offered me watermelon.
I like potato chips.
She offered me watermelon, but I passed.
Why? That's good.
I just had the sandwich. And
the what?
A sandwich.
Sandwich. Sandwich.
He calls it a sandwich.
I know.
Sandwich and water. That's what I had for dinner.
Oh, that's
nice. It wasn't,
nice.
And I'm hungry now.
I can tell.
I'm like looking around.
So you can go get something
to
eat.
We should have ordered a pizza earlier. We should have had a pizza.
Yeah, we should have.
You know?
Maybe tomorrow.
Why didn't you think of that? Roger?
I wasn't hungry.
I'm over here.
Roger
took care of myself. I
brought his own food.
I got my own food.
Roger brings his own food. It always looks good, too.
Yeah.
But he
Sweet
only,
and sour
but he only has enough for himself, so I don't know.
I never
ask him, hey, can I have two or three bites of that?
Or so?
You have 4 or 5 bites of that, Roger.
That's about all he's got up there.
Yeah,
and then
no.
Roger's always so generous. He brings, generally, he didn't today.
Yeah, I forgot. I'm
but he
cookies
usually brings
and chocolate coffee cake.
He brings coffee cake.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. It's like Sara Lee, right?
No, it's
no,
from Jewel.
It's not.
Oh, it's not?
No,
okay.
It's a store brand.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
I said it.
It's always good.
Is it okay?
Yeah, a cup of coffee and and a bite of that. It's very nice of Roger.
Now you're making yourself hungrier. I know.
Shares. I'm hungry.
I know. I noticed that.
Woodman's is open.
I brought you some popcorn.
You know, if you let me do the news and leave
get
right
get
away,
faster.
You can get back in time.
I think we're gonna. I think we'll stop at Woodman's on the way.
On the way home, we'll get we'll get some stuff for tonight for snacks.
Yeah.
We'll
Woodman's
pick up
is
some
the
snacks.
Best. They're open 24/7.
All right.
God,
we're gonna go to Woodman's.
God, I love Woodman's.
All right, we're gonna
so
go to Woodman's.
So awesome! And they, you know what I really love about Woodman's?
They have fruit trays.
No, they have the biggest carts.
Carts?
Bigger carts than Jewel or anywhere else.
Oh, you can't
else.
Get in the cart. I'm not going to push you in the cart.
Again?
Come on,
again.
Lisa.
Again.
I'm not going to push you.
Push me around.
You know what I'll do? I'll just give it one great big push and hope that it goes straight. Right down the aisle.
Woodman's knows what they're doing. They're open 24/7.
That's very smart.
They have the largest carts. And you save the most money.
And what else do you need?
You save the most money shopping at Woodman's.
All right, we'll go
it's
tonight.
It's so true. Roger, I'm
Roger,
telling you.
Roger, what can
I
we
know.
Get
this
for
is
you
not
for tonight?
Like, yes, they're a sponsor, but this is not... This is not me. This is the truth.
All right, Roger,
you
we're going to bring some snacks for
money.
Tonight from
okay,
Woodman's.
Sounds good.
And you know what else you get at Woodman's when
what?
You
get
shop
a big
there?
Cart?
Oh.
No, you just take your receipt.
Yeah.
Take a photo of it with your smartphone. Email
okay.
it to us at woodmanswgn@gmail.com, and we'll send you 12 classic radio shows via digital download.
For free.
For free. Every month.
That's
we change the 12
those
shows.
Those are the important words. For
That's
free.
That's such a deal.
I mean, what? Just go shop at Woodman's, take a picture of receipt, send it to Woodman's, WGN, at gmail.com.
And
you got 12
free.
Classic radio shows.
Right. Go
can
for
you,
it.
How can you beat that? Well, I guess if you gave them 13.
And then when you get them, you could sit there, you could eat what you bought at Woman.
That. What about a woman?
Did you talk about a woman?
He's inflicting his errors.
Don't blame this one on Carl. Errors. This
that's
one's
all
Roger.
A sandwich, and now it's a woman.
A sandwich and a woman.
That's going to end up on Nick's...
that's a good combo,
well,
right, Roger?
I hope so.
It's going to end up on Nick's inappropriate.
Right. No, it's not inappropriate.
Yes, we generally do.
All right, fine.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. All right, in this hour, the great Gildersleeve, Leroy, from 1947, that is coming your way. But first, it's time to play our game. Is it real or ridiculous?
Is it ridiculous? The prize is general admission for two adults and two children to Sycamore Speedway. So that's a fun gift.
Right.
And we are going to be talking about Kate Jackson.
Kate Jackson.
Yes.
She was in my Twilight Zones.
Oh, well.
She did two Twilight Zones for me.
Then,
she's awesome.
Then you should know all about
love
her.
Love Kate Jackson.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
All right.
So we're going to go with caller number six. Call right now at 312-981-7200. We will be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Just great.
Hi,
terrific.
Sharon.
You made it. Your caller, what did I ask for?
Four, maybe?
Six or seven.
Six,
I think.
Your caller six. Uh-huh. You made it through. We're going to do a little Kate Jackson, okay?
Great. We live right near Woodman's. We go there every day.
Oh, yeah.
So you can vouch for the great prices and the great store.
And don't they have
my
huge?
My husband does.
And don't they have huge carts there?
Carl loves the carts.
They do, but we take the small one because it's easy to maneuver.
Yeah. I like the big one because
I
load up. You know, I load up with all my food for like two weeks. Yeah.
All right.
And I have a 21-year-old son who eats me out of house and home. So thank goodness for Woodman's.
Right.
We live about a mile away or two, so it's really close.
Ah, very good. All right, here we go.
All right, number one. She was Kate Jackson in Charlie's Angels, was originally cast as Kelly Garrett, which went to her co-star Jacqueline Smith. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
I don't think so. I'm going to say ridiculous.
It's real. You are absolutely right,
man.
Sharon. Good for you.
There you go, Sharon.
Do you remember her name in Charlie's Angels? She was Sabrina Duncan. Okay, but you're right. She absolutely was. Okay, number two.
I should know that just agree with my listeners because they're way smarter than
I am. Let's try this one. She was offered Meryl Streep's role in the film Kramer versus Kramer. But turned it down. Real or ridiculous?
Real.
I'm going to say ridiculous.
It's real. Sharon, go Sharon.
I just
Sharon.
Said I was going to agree with mine.
Go Sharon. And this is for
this
Carl.
This is for me.
There we go.
This is my theme song.
Wah, wah. That's like a Debbie Downer you know, from SNL.
Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
Okay. Number three. She starred in an episode of Mork and Mindy with Henry Winkler and Penny Marshall. Real or ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
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 All right.
All right. You...
Thanks to Sharon, I got one right.
That's absolutely right. Sharon, you got them all right. And I'm not kidding. That's seriously rare around here. But you are a winner no matter what. But you really are the winner. And you have won general admission for two adults and two children to Sycamore Speedway, family owned since 1963. Plan your visit now at sycamorespeedway.com. That sounds so fun. I hope you have a great time there. And if you go there and have a great time, I hope you let us know how you're experience was.
I have no idea where it is, and I'm going to give it to my son-in-law that's
terrific.
A mechanic and loves cars.
Oh, that sounds fun. Mm-hmm. Well, great. I'm glad that you won,
perfect.
And thank you for calling
next
in.
Next time you're driving around Woodman's in those small carts and big carts, think of us.
Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. If you see somebody coming down the row in a big cart,
it's me.
It's Carl.
Oh, good. Can hardly wait.
Thanks, Sharon.
Take care.
Take care. All right, she's a big winner. Don't forget, text us. We're here till 2 o'clock, so you have about 45 minutes to text us, 312 981-7200. We love getting your texts. And we love playing classic radio shows for you, too, like The Great Gildersleeve, my brother's least favorite radio show.
Yeah, most people love The Great Gildersleeve.
I love The Great
Gildersleeve.
So
we're just not going to listen to
this. This was on a long time, and this was on from 1941 into the mid-1950s. It's a long, long time.
It sure is.
And then it made a transition to television. And Hal Perry, who originated the role of Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, he left the show in the height of its popularity in 1950 to star in a different show that did not do well called Honest Harold. And Willard Waterman came in and played Gildy, and no one even knew the difference because his voice was so similar to Hal Perry's. And then Willard Waterman continued and played the character on television. And years ago, Lisa, and I've told this story before, years ago, I went to a, I think I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, and they had a, you know, a convention, and a lot of these radio stars were there, and Willard Waterman was there, along with the woman who played Lila Ransom, Shirley Mitchell. I'm trying to think if there was any other Gildersleeve people there. No. And I won the audition to play Leroy. So I was like, hey, Unc. And it was me and Willard Waterman at the microphone together and Shirley Mitchell as Lila Ransom.
Remarkable.
There's a video of it somewhere. In fact, someone said they had the video. It's a video of us doing a radio reenactment of The Great Gildersleeve. Willard Waterman, tall guy. He was like a 6'5 guy, tall.
Same as you. Said in your mind,
I'm
6'5
on the show. and he and I, we had a lot of scenes together because I was Leroy. What
perfect.
I mean, you want to talk about a dream come true, to stand next to Willard Waterman doing a reenactment of a Gildersleeve. Shirley Mitchell is right there, too. But I love this show. All right, let's go back to a broadcast date of March 19th, 1947. Here's part one of The Great Gildersleeve.
The Kraft Foods Company presents The Great Gildersleeve. It's The Great Gildersleeve, starring Harold Perry, brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of a complete line of famous quality food products. It's the middle of the afternoon, not even 3 o'clock yet, but Gildersleeve has locked up the water department for the day. He has to get to the bank before it closes, and he's told himself it would hardly be worth returning after that. In one hand, he carries a small canvas bag, well stuffed and gathered at the top with a drawstring. On his way down State Street, he chances to pass Peavy's Pharmacy. He stops, hefts the canvas bag, and steps into the shop.
Peavy, my friend?
Well, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Peavy, I'll bet you can't guess what's in that bag.
What's in the bag?
Yeah. Go on and guess.
Oh, excuse me, I'll just see what this gentleman wants first. Was there something you were looking for, sir?
No, just looking around. I'm waiting for a bus.
Oh, well, always glad to have people look around. Now, Mr. Gildersleeve, what can I do?
Go ahead. Guess what's in the bag, Peavy.
What's in the bag?
Yes.
Sounds like money.
Correct. And how much money? Guess.
I wouldn't want to say.
Go ahead, make a guess.
$50?
My friend, right there in that little bag, there's no less than $2,200 in cash.
Oh, gracious, you bet.
Yes, sir. $2,200. Oh. More money than you've ever seen, even. Would you like to see a $20 bill?
Mr. Gildersleeve, I wouldn't talk so loud if I were you.
Why not?
Well, that man over there at the magazine rack, do you know him?
Never seen him before in my life.
Neither have I.
What of it?
Well, I never feel easy with large sums of money around. Now, for instance, if he should happen to be a... Well, there he goes.
Must have seen his bus coming.
Or heard us talking about him.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm not a suspicious man, Mr. Gildersleeve, but there are very few people in this town that I don't know by sight, and the way he bolted out of here...
Could have been his bus coming.
Could have been.
Why did I have to go and shoot off my big mouth? Oh, you're being ridiculous, Peavy.
Cautious, maybe. As a matter of fact, I make it a point to never have more than $5 on the premises here at any time.
I don't see what you're worried about here. You've got a safe.
Oh, I never keep money in the safe.
Well, why not?
My first place a burglar would look.
Well, I never thought of that. Well, where do you keep it? Peavy, you trust me, don't you?
Absolutely.
I trust you. Here I come in here with all this money.
Let me ask you something. How do you happen to be carrying all this money?
Well, it's Bessie's fault. That's my secretary. Or she was. Ever since she quit, things have been turning up. I looked in a desk drawer today, and there was 2 weeks' cash receipts. Never been deposited. A fine thing. If I could get Bessie back, I'd fire her.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, my advice to you would be to get that money right down to the bank.
That's what I'm on my way to do. Just stopped in here to, well, I'll let you have a look at it.
Well, thank you. That's very considerate. But if I were you, I wouldn't stop to show it to anyone else. It's 2:58 right now, and the bank closes.
2 minutes of? Are you sure, Peavy? Oh, my goodness. My watch must be... Goodbye, Peavy. Oh, sorry, madam. I'll never make it. Oh! Sorry, pal. One side, please. Oh, brother, is it still open? Locked. Let me in. Hey! Darn banks, they're always closed when you want them. Hey! Banks, they take your money and they won't let you in. Open up here. Hey! The guard sees me. Here he comes. Taking his sweet time about it, though. Come on, fatso. Well, open up. Don't stand there making faces at me. What's he shaking his head about? Let me in. I want to deposit some money. I don't want to look at your watch. I want to deposit some money. Hey, come back here. Fake cop grins and goes away. It's the way it always is. Come down here and they slam the door right in your face. Sorry. Call themselves a bank. They have a holiday every 5 minutes. Columbus Day, Hoover's birthday. Now what do? I've got all this money here. Just have to take it home with me, I guess. By George, if anything happens to it, I'll sue them. I'll sue the pants off of them. Anybody home? Well, just as well. Let's get rid of this right away, I guess. Hide it someplace. Where? I know. If I tuck it down in the bottom here.
Mr. Gildersleeve, I didn't know you
were... What? Bertie, don't ever do that.
Don't do what?
Don't ever sneak up on me like that.
I wasn't sneaking up on nobody. I didn't even know you was home. I just came in here...
All right. You startled me. That's all, Bertie. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Something wrong with the clock?
No, nothing wrong. I'm just taking a look, that's all.
You lose something?
No, I thought I heard a slight noise in there. Thought maybe a squirrel had built a nest or something. But it turns out that was not the case. No, the clock's all right.
Well, it ain't going. You better let me...
Bertie!
Yes, sir?
If the clock needs fixing, Bertie, I'll fix it.
Well, it's up to you. The pendulum stopped, that's all.
I know. A pendulum hit me in the ear. It's a very delicate clock, Bertie. It was made by an ancestor.
Will you tell Uncle about that, and I'll tell him what you did.
Tell him what?
Oh, all right.
Quiet, Bertie. Here comes the children. Don't say anything about you know.
About what?
About anything. Come away from the clock.
I ain't gonna touch it.
Well, come away from it. Well, children.
Hello, Unky.
Hi.
What's this you're not gonna tell your uncle? Leroy?
Nothing, Unc.
Marjorie?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bertie?
Yes, sir?
If you're going upstairs, bring down my revolver, will you?
Are you kidding?
Well, it isn't loaded, Bertie, but never mind. I'll get it myself. You couldn't find the bullets anyway.
Revolver? What in the heck?
What do you want your revolver for, Uncle? Yes, what for?
Nothing.
Uncle Mort, you can't say you just want a revolver for nothing.
It's just a precaution, that's all. Now, I don't want to alarm you children, but when you have large sums of money on hand, it's always safest to... Well, you know the Army's motto, be prepared.
Well, how much money have you got, Uncle Maury?
Yeah, how much? Where did you get it? Did you win it?
There are other ways of getting money than winning it, Leroy.
Yeah? What?
Besides, this isn't my money. That's why it's such a responsibility.
How much is it, Anki?
A considerable sum. Over $2,000. $2,200, to be exact.
Really? And Craig is always blowing about how much dough his old man has. Oh, boy, just wait a
minute. Leroy! You come right back here. I want you to say a word about this to anybody. You understand? Either of you. I don't want you to even mention the word money.
Why not?
Because somebody might try to break in here and steal it, you idiot.
Really, Leroy?
Well, I didn't know. Gosh.
Where is the money, Unc?
Never mind. I've hidden it.
Where?
In a safe place. Where nobody will find it.
Where?
Never mind. I'm not telling.
Is it in the clock?
Oh! How did you know?
Well, Unky, that's where you always hide everything.
That's the first place we look on Easter.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to hide it somewhere else. Well, might as well get it out as long as every Tom, Dick, and Harry knows about it.
Can I look at it? Can I? Can I hold it?
Get off of me, Leroy. Get out of the way.
Is that it? That little bag?
That's it, my dear.
Oh, he's kidding us.
I am not.
Open it up. Let us just peek, please.
Well, here. We'll put it on the table.
Gee, I never saw so much.
Yeah. That, my boy, is a $20 bill. Probably the only one you'll ever see. That's legal tender.
Who's the old geezer on it?
Don't they teach you any history at that school? That's Washington.
Under the picture it says Jackson.
Well, some have Washington and some have Jackson. Who's that?
The phone. I'll answer it. Hello? Judge? Yes, Uncle Mort's right here. Oh, and Judge, guess what he brought home with him?
Marjorie!
Huh?
Give me that telephone. I'll speak to you later, young lady.
But I didn't know.
Hello,
that you...
Judge. What's on your mind? Poker tonight? Love to, sure. What time of the boy? No. Wait. I can't, Judge. I can't, that's all. I don't dare go out of the house. Never mind why I can't. See, why don't you get the jolly boys to come over here? Just as well play here as there. Sure. We'll do that. And Horace... Horace, when you come and ring the doorbell, give it two short rings and two long. That'll be the signal. Never mind. Just do as I say if you want to get in. Now, young lady, what did I tell you?
Tell me about what?
About mentioning that money to people.
Well, I didn't think that you...
You children don't seem to realize the seriousness of this situation. I want you to say nothing about it, you understand? Nothing.
But it was only Judge Hooker. Surely you don't think... I mean, the judge would never in the world...
That's what they said about Benedict Arnold.
I actually think Gildersleeve may be one of the best of the situation comedies of the golden age of radio. It's so great. And the fact that he was established as a character on Fibber, McGee, and Molly. You know, he had Fibber, McGee, and Molly was such a popular show. It was one of the top shows on radio. And here was Gildersleeve. It was Fibber's next-door neighbor. And his character was so established on that show. So then when it was spun out in 1941 for his own show, it had a built-in audience that knew what this character was all about.
Knew him and loved him.
Right, sure. Yeah. And so it was just
it made perfect sense.
Natural, yeah. It was just a natural winner to be his own show.
Well, that's what TV tries to do as well with all the spin-offs. They're hoping you love the character enough to, like Rhoda or Archie's
But place. Gildersleeve was the very first spin-off in all of entertainment. It was the first time a show spun out of another show, Gildersleeve. And I love the great Gildersleeve. I think it's fantastic. Let's get back to it in a few minutes. But first, it is time for this quick spot.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We We've had a lot of texts tonight. We thank you. We do love your texts. And our text in line, 312-981-7200. Lisa's cracking up all the time at the text. She's always like big smile on her face. And
well, people have a lot of interesting things to say.
That they do. And so does Gildersleeve.
People say the darndest things.
He has very interesting things
yes,
to say,
he
too.
He does.
He's guarding $2,200. It's a lot of money. Let's get back now to the great Gildersleeve.
Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve. His friends have arrived and given the prearranged signal to his satisfaction. He has unchained, unbolted, and unlocked his front door and is welcoming his guests.
Come in quick, fellas.
What's going on here, anyway?
Wait. What is all this, Commissioner? Expecting relatives?
No.
Good evening, Mr. Is that a pistol?
For heaven's sake, Gildy, what's got into you?
Nothing. I'm just being careful, that's all. Where's the chief?
Had to go out of town. Cops convention.
By George. You leave your coats in the hall here.
Thanks.
Let's go in the parlor, shall we?
I wish you'd put that cannon down, Commissioner. I ain't saying you don't know how to handle it, only I'm nervous, that's all.
I can handle it. Don't worry, Floyd. That's one thing I learned in World War I, if I didn't learn anything else.
Well, it seems to me you owe us an explanation, Gildy. Mysterious signals, doors bolted, waving a pistol.
I prefer not to give an explanation, Judge. I think you can take my assurance that I have reasons. I may say also that I'm darn glad to see you, fellas.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, has all this got anything to do
with... Peavy, whatever you're thinking, don't say it.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, don't. Have a chair, Judge. Make yourself comfortable, Floyd.
I'll try the sofa. Well, what are we going to play? Poker or cops and robbers?
I'm for poker. Only, Gildy, I think it might look more like a sociable game if you put that gun in your desk or someplace. Get it out of sight.
All right. You talk like somebody's grandmother.
Well, let's get going. How do you feel, Peeve? Lucky?
Poker's a game of skill, Floyd.
Ha! Let's get the chips around. I can't stay out all night.
Everything is on the table, fellas. I was going to... Did you hear something?
Hear what?
I heard somebody out in the porch.
Just the wind, Mr. Gildersleeve. There's quite a breeze out this evening. It's March, you know.
Oh, yes.
No ashtrays around, Commissioner. Fireplace okay for butt?
Oh, sure, Floyd.
Okay.
Floyd, for heaven's sake, you want to start a fire in there? Oh, I should think you'd have more sense.
What did I do? You just told me it was okay.
Well, if you must know, it just so happens I don't want $2,200 to go up and smoke, that's all.
$2,200? Funny place to keep it.
He's kidding. If he had $2,200, he'd be in Mexico.
You can count it if you want to. No, you don't. It's not my money. These are water department funds.
All the more reason to go to Mexico.
Huh?
What'd you do, sell a reservoir?
It's 2 weeks' collections. I got to the bank too late to make the deposit, and I have reason to believe certain people know about it. There's been a lot of crime lately around here, fellas.
Oh, poppycock.
Hey, I got a great idea. Let's use the money instead of chips. Make it look like a big game, huh?
No. There'll be no tampering with department funds. I'll put the bag here on the mantle where I can keep an eye on it. I'll hide it again later.
All right, let's play poker. Divide up some of these chips, will you, Peavy?
I'm counting a card.
Let me have that chair, will you, Floyd? I'd like to keep an eye on the money.
I think you'd rather keep an eye on the door.
Maybe you're right. Stay there.
Okay.
Now what? Deal me in, fellas. Hello? Hello? They hung up. That's funny.
What's funny about it? Wrong number, that's all. Some guy calling up a girl and he gets you. I'd hang up, too.
I don't like that phone call, fellas. If somebody knows the money's here, they'd naturally try to find out if I was home.
49, 50, 51, 52. I guess they're all here.
All right, for heaven's sake, let's play poker.
I'll never bet on a pair of eights again.
Well, it was a nice game. Nobody got hurt, and we all get home early.
I don't see why everybody is in such a hurry. Horace, why not stick around and play a little cribbage? It's early.
I've got to be in court in the morning, Gildy. dispossessed case.
Oh. Floyd? Peavy?
If I stay out any later tonight, I'll never get out tomorrow night.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve, but you know my rule. Always in bed by 12.
Yes, I know your rule, but it's only 11.
Well, I have various things to attend to before I retire.
Fine bunch of friends, I must say. Hey, I think there's some cold tongue in the icebox, fellas. Stick around, we'll eat.
What's the matter, Commissioner? Nervous?
Certainly not.
I wouldn't worry, Gildy. These crime waves in the papers are generally exaggerated. Is my coat? Yeah, it is.
Wait a minute. Judge, you mean these robberies and holdups, there weren't any?
Well, no. There has been a certain amount of lawlessness, but the police have rounded up most of the bad element.
They didn't get those guys that stuck up old man Hogan, tied him up in the cellar and stole his drapes and silver.
Never caught him, you say?
Nope. They come around here, just give them the money, Commissioner. Don't try to be a hero. Come on, fellas, let's get going.
Good night, Mr. Gildersleeve, and thank you for a pleasant evening.
Good night, Peavy. Wait a minute, Floyd. I'll unlock the door.
Well, come on, I can hear Lovey's foot tapping the floor already.
He's gone to get his gun.
You must think he's Edward G. Robinson. He's crazy.
Fellas, would you do me a favor? Leave quietly. There's no use advertising the fact that I'm all alone here.
Anything you say, Gildy.
We'll be little mice.
Well, good night, boys.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, sweetheart.
Oh, for the...
Hey, listen to him locking himself up.
Gildy likes to dramatize these little situations.
Say, how'd it be if we throw a rock at the window or something, huh? Worry him a little.
Oh, that's a cruel idea, Floyd.
I wouldn't hurt him. Just scratch on one of the shutters, maybe. What do you say, Peeve? Just for laughs, huh?
Well, I wouldn't care to take part in it, Floyd. On the other hand...
Ah, go on, you're both chicken. Wait here a minute, and I'll do it. I'll get a stick and scratch on the parlor window.
As a rule, Peavy, I despise practical jokes. The funnier they are, the worse they are. Hey,
Floyd's poking into the window now. Oh, rascal.
Holy smokes, the guy's got no sense of humor at all.
I want the police department, operator. I don't know the number. It says in the book you don't have to know the number in an emergency. Well, this is an emergency. Darn chief of police. Every time there's a crime wave, he's out of town. Let's see. Where's the best place to be in case of a... If I drag the chair over here, I can command the door and all the windows. At the same time, my rear is protected. That's very important. There. Maybe hours before that cop gets here. Well, just have to stay on the alert till he arrives, that's all. Only 4 bullets left. Police department's a disgrace. I'll tell him so. I'll tell the chief personally. If he doesn't pay any attention, I'll tell the chief. Yeah. Tell the chief. What's that? Just the wind, I guess. Oh. What am I doing here?
Help! Drop that gun! Drop that gun!
dragon.
Ribble-deeble.
Miss Gilsley.
Renzo.
I don't know what to do, Leroy. He looks awful. If I wake him up, he'll be mad.
If you let him sleep, he'll be mad, too. Hey, Unc.
Zeef, what's your fault?
It's 9:30. Can I have my allowance?
9:30? What day is it?
Saturday. Can I have my allowance?
Where's Dave? Where's that money?
The money bag's right there under your chair, Mr. Gilsley.
Oh.
You want some breakfast?
No. No time for breakfast. Gotta get this stuff to the bank as soon as it opens. If I... What's asleep, Bertie? Have you got a brown paper bag?
I guess so, Mr. Gilsley. What for?
I had an idea in the middle of the night. I'll put the money bag inside the brown paper bag so nobody will notice it.
I'll see if I got one.
Mouth tastes terrible.
Can I have my allowance, Unc?
For heaven's sake, Leroy, stop thinking about money. Money, money, money. That's all I hear around this house. I didn't sleep a wink all night trying to protect you children. Now you want money.
Oh, gosh.
Here's one I'll hold it, Miss Gilsley.
Yeah, that ought to do it, Bertie. There. What time did you say it was?
About 9:30.
Oh, my watch has stopped. Guess I forgot to wind it. Well, I'll just catch the bus on the corner. And where's my hat?
Here. Are you coming back, Unc?
I'll be back for breakfast. What the... Oh.
When you come back, can we discuss
this? I'll see. Don't bother me about it.
Gosh, $2,200 and he can't spare 50 cents.
You'd think I'd know somebody on this bus. Not a soul.
Nice morning, isn't it?
What?
I said, nice morning.
Oh.
This is my lunch in the bag.
That's so?
Yep. I don't usually take my lunch to the office, but today I thought I would. Such a nice day. I've got an orange in here and a roast beef sandwich and some potato chips and a piece of chocolate cake. Don't you believe me?
I believe you.
Guess you want to read your paper, huh?
If it's all right with you.
Oh, sure.
Friendly. Try to be pleasant in what happens. He's not reading his paper. He's watching me out of the corner of his eye. Ugly fellow across the aisle there, too. He's pretending not to look at me either. I wonder if they're in league. Probably Confederates. Scratching his nose must be a signal. It won't trap me. I'll wait till everybody's off and then I'll make a break for it. Wish I'd brought my gun. I've got a permit. Ought to get one. I will. See the sheriff the first thing Monday. A lot of crime going on, no matter what Hooker says. The courts are always the last to get wind of these things. A lot of crime. In broad daylight, too. Post-war psychology.
Hey, please.
Keep cool, Gildersleeve. Don't move yet. They're not moving. Wait. Now.
Out! Gangway!
Hey!
Let me out, folks!
Hey.
Oh! Pardon me. Let me out.
Guess I was too smart for him. Yes, sir. You have to get up pretty early in the morning to catch old...
Hey!
He's getting off, too.
Hey!
¶¶
Gee, I made it. Oh, for goodness. Let me in. Let me in there. Hey, you. Don't grin at me. Open up. There's a man after me.
Hey.
Don't shoot.
Here. You forgot your lunch.
My lunch?
The Great Gildersleeve is played by Harold Perry. It is written by John Wheaton and Sam Moore. The music is by Jack Meekin. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley, Louise Erickson, Lillian Randolph, Earl Ross, and Dick McGrath. Stay tuned in for Duffy's Tavern, which follows over most of these stations. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the Kraft Foods Company and inviting you to listen in again next Wednesday for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
I'm going out now to eat my lunch. Good night, folks.
I hope you enjoyed it. The Great Gildersleeve, March 19th, 1947, Guarding the Money. Hal Perry starring on that, sponsored by Kraft, is heard on NBC. You know, Lisa, on our radio reenactment, when we go on the cruise next August to Bermuda on Oceania Cruises, what do you want to do? You want to do like a detective show and a comedy show or a scary show? And what do you want to do? Bickerson's?
I think a scary show would be a lot
of fun.
We'll
do a scary one.
I think
and a
everybody
comedy.
Loves that. I think that'd be a perfect combination.
Right. Do one scary one and one comedy. And
I think
our
be
listeners
perfect.
That are with us on our cruise next year at this time in August 1st.
Yeah.
2020. We will have a reenactment. You can be in it. And we will have a cocktail party. We're going to be eating together in all of the different restaurants. We're going to have a trivia contest, and we're going to do some excursions, right?
Right. We're going to go
in
to
Bermuda.
St. George and Hamilton, to
right.
Places in Bermuda. We're going to have a great getaway on Insignia at 7 nights. But, you know, this ship is supposed to be something really fantastic. I know it's all new, renovated, reimagined. There's restaurants and fitness centers and spas and lounges and bars and a casino, and the list goes on and on. And I think it's going to be a great way to, you know, you can, you know, kind of relax and have a really relaxing, quiet vacation, or you can run around and go to the islands and keep as busy as you want to. But either way, we're going to be there, and we're going to make sure it's a great, fun
week.
We're
going to have
together.
A great time with our listeners. I hope you can join us next year, August 1st, for 7 nights, and it starts at like $11.99. We got a great rate because it's a big group. Although I don't think it's going to be a huge group. I'm guessing like around 40 to 50 people, probably. That's it. So it won't be too.
I don't know. I know there's a limit on how many rooms you set aside. So check it out.
So that's only like 25 rooms. So they're going to go fast. So make sure you come with us.
So go to WGNRadiotheater.com, and then you can scroll down and there will be a cruise banner. Click on it. You can get all the information, or I can also give you the number for Keen Luxury Travel.
Yeah, write
this
number down.
I know they'd love to talk to you.
You can call them and they'll walk you all through it.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to talk to a person, get your questions answered, and get a little bit more of an idea of what to expect.
What's the number?
The number is 800, toll free, 856-1155. 800-856-1155.
Right. All right. Hope you can join us
next
August. And I mean, you know, yes, we're talking about it a year in advance, but people like to book ahead of time. They like to know where they're going on their vacation. And
yeah, well, stick with us. We'll take good care of you.
It's supposed to be like 85 to 90 degrees in Bermuda at that time. That's what they're saying. That's the weather.
Carl's going to wear a swimsuit. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I am. I'm going to wear a Speedo.
A white one.
No, I will not. All right. So when we come back tonight, we have more classic radio shows for you. Our Miss Brooks, Eve Arden as Connie Brooks. Then The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you're with us here at 11 p.m. tonight when we come back.